world-renowned director, choreographer, and producer, Vincent Patterson, whose career spans just about every genre of the entertainment industry, including film, theater, concert tours, opera, music videos, television, and commercials. Patterson graduated from Dickinson College in 1972 and was inspired to consider a theater career by the late Dickinson professor and Mermaid Players director, David Brubaker. Patterson received his first big break when Michael Jackson hired him as a dancer in his Beat It video in 1982. Patterson has worked with everyone from Bette Davis and Glenn Close to the Beatles and Bjork, but according to him, out of everyone he's worked with, there was no one as polite and as much of a gentleman as Jackson. In the late 1980s, Patterson choreographed and directed the music video Smooth Criminal and later directed and choreographed Jackson's Bad World Tour. Patterson has also choreographed and directed Blood on the Dance Floor and has choreographed the 25th anniversary of Thriller, of which he was a dancer and an assistant choreographer for the 1983 original. In addition to working with Jackson, Patterson has choreographed and directed Madonna's Blonde Ambition Tour and her legendary Marie Antoinette Vogue performance for MTV. Patterson directed the critically acclaimed opera Manon, and he received the nomination for Best Television Arts Program at the Montreux Film Festival for his direction of Anna Netrebko, The Woman, The Voice. Patterson has choreographed several films, including The Birdcage, Closer, and Evita. He directed the TNT telefilm In Search of Dr. Seuss, which received 7 Emmy Award nominations. Patterson has also choreographed London's West End production of Lenny and LA's opera Grand Duchess. Patterson received a Tony nomination for choreographing Hal Prince's Kiss of the Spider Woman. Over the course of his career, Patterson has also choreographed over 250 commercials. Patterson has just finished working on his latest production, Viva Elvis, for Cirque du Soleil in Las Vegas. Patterson is one of this year's Metzger Conway Fellows, a program established at Dickinson in 1982 that showcases graduates of distinction by their participation in various classes, meeting with faculty and student groups, and presenting lectures about their postgraduate work. Everyone is invited to attend a reception after this program being held at the Clark Forum, located at 249 West Lowther Street. Vincent Patterson will also be available for additional questions at the reception. At this time, I'd like to remind you to please turn off all cell phones and other electronic devices. Also, since this program is being taped and some of our audience members may be hearing impaired, please wait for the microphone to reach you before asking your question during the question and answer session at the end of this program. Thank you, and please join me in welcoming Vincent Patterson.
Thank you.
I really am the man behind the throne, and so I'm very comfortable when I'm in my medium, and I'm not nervous at all when I have, you know, 200 people in front of me that I'm directing or choreographing, but standing in front of you, I'm scared to death. So that's one thing to know about me. The second thing to know about me right off the top is that I'm a big softie, and when I talk a lot about the experiences that I've been fortunate enough to have in my life, I often start crying. So I'm not schizophrenic if I break down here, you know. I'm not bipolar. I'm totally healthy, but I may break down now and then. The third thing is I do all of these amazing things in all of these genres, but I'm kind of an idiot operating a DVD machine, so, and I've got to do that myself, so bear with me when we get to those parts. First of all, I just want to say thank you to everyone, and especially to Harry Pohlman. This is a very humbling revisit to Dickinson for me. They asked me what should they call this, and I said the man behind the throne because that's what I've chosen to do with my life. I never had a publicist. I never really cared for anybody to know who I was. I'm a workhorse, basically, and I always wanted the work to speak for itself. So I'm going to try to, the way I sort of decided to do the evening is, first of all, it was really hard to put 42 years into 60 minutes, but I'm going to try to do that. I'm going to sort of talk about segments of the kind of work that I do and then show you some examples. I think many of you will be familiar with a lot of the work, and I hope that through the little stories that I share, which I like to do, you'll see some of the work with new eyes. And then finally, I'm a really nice guy, so if you have questions, feel free to ask me. You know, my life is kind of an open book. I don't really keep very many secrets. I'm not so good at that. So as Fabiola said, I did graduate from Dickinson in 72. I came here thinking I was going to go to law school, but I fell into the hands of David Brubaker. And you probably know him of him. If you don't, he was an amazing human being. He and his wife, Marge, would take you under your wing, under their wings, and if you had talent, help to hone that to perfection. He changed the course of my life. See, I'm crying already. Anyway, I was going to leave after my second year. I was so active in the theater here, I got totally addicted, and I auditioned for NYU School of the Arts, and I got in, and David called me and said, "Vincent, if you come back, I'll work with you to create an interdisciplinary theater major." So he and I worked together, and there were amazing professors here like Professor Klein and others who were teaching French drama in French, and we asked them, would they teach the course in English? And they were wonderful and acquiesced. And so the class in front of me was the first class that actually graduated with a major in drama and dramatic literature, and I was the second class. Everything that I learned here carried me throughout my career, although it was a very circuitous route to get to where I finally am now, which is retired. So, but after leaving Dickinson, I did basically what most graduates do. I drove a high school bus. I gave guided historical tours of Philadelphia. I was a janitor for a landscaping company at Swarthmore College. And I was the lead actor in a play by Jean Genet called The Screens at Society Hill Playhouse for no pay. I can't stand the cold, so a friend had a car and we traveled west. We landed in Tucson in January and it was like 80 degrees and I said, "I'm getting off here," and I basically stayed in Tucson. I couldn't find a job. It was very difficult. My father taught social dance, and from the time I was a little kid, I could do a lot of basic social dance steps, the cha-cha, the foxtrot, the jitterbug. And so the job that I got was pushing overweight, elderly, blue-haired ladies with a lot of turquoise jewelry and a lot of face powder around the floor. And I did that for a year. It was quite an experience. Meanwhile, on my way to work every day, I passed by a little ballet studio. Well, I was a theater mole, so I never spent much time in physical activity or sports or anything like this. But I would pass by this studio, and I would hear music playing, and I one day peeked in the door, and it looked kind of fun in there, and there were some kids having a ballet class. And I went to the woman who ran the studio and said, "Wow, that looks cool. I'd love to try something like that. Do you have an adult class?" And she said, "No, we just have classes for children right now and teenagers." And I said, "Well, I want to try ballet." So she said, "Well, you can take class with the little girls." So I took ballet class with 10 to 13-year-old girls, and it was fantastic. I could jump higher than they could, and I could lift them, you know. So it was amazing for my ego. I thought I was incredible. But what I did is, and this came out of Dickinson as well, I had no stretch. I had nothing. I couldn't touch my knees, let alone my toes. So I thought, well, what if I approach this as an actor? So I got books out of the library with Nureyev, and I would look at the photographs, and I would see him in these different characters, and so I thought, all right, I'm going to approach it from the inside out. And I would go to class one day, and I would say, all right, today I'm going to be Prince Igor or something. And I would put that into my head, so the whole time I was standing in class with all of these adorable little girls, I was Nureyev. And somehow this made the movement happen more naturally to my body. And along with that, the endorphins that flowed through my body from dancing was a sensation I hadn't experienced since I ran cross country in high school. And it was amazing. It was the most incredible drug one can have. So I thought, I'm going to dance for a while. I walked around Tucson with a broomstick under my arms to lift my posture. I carried in a knapsack a Coca-Cola bottle and a telephone book so that everywhere I went, I pulled the telephone book out and sat on the edge of it to try to get from my legs from this position to that position. And I would take off my shoes and roll the Coke bottle with my feet so it would look like I had some sort of arch. And I did this for a while. I worked with some small companies in Tucson. They needed male dancers desperately, obviously, and they let me dance with them and have classes for free. I just decided this is what I want to do, and because I wanted the cold weather, didn't like the cold weather, I didn't go to New York and I went to Los Angeles. I had $1,000 and a sleeping bag and a duffel bag with everything I owned. My mother, who's here, raised us. We didn't have much money. There was no one I could call to ask for money. So I had to do it all by myself. I get emotional. I looked in the paper and I found two people looking for a roommate. When I went to visit them, it was a one-bedroom apartment in Hollywood, and it was a black transvestite, a white prostitute, and two French poodles. But they said I could stay there. So I did. And they were like the most generous, loving people I ever met. They gave me a corner of the room, and I had my sleeping bag there, and I had to leave at certain times of the day when it got busy. But other than that, it was fine, you know? But I made a vow to myself, which is something that I do often. I create these ultimatums for myself, and then I have to live up to those ultimatums. So I had decided that if I had to do anything but dance, I was not going to be a dancer. I didn't want to be a waiter who called himself a dancer. So I used all the money I had, and I auditioned for everything I could. I took up to 10 hours of dance a day. I worked my ass off, basically, and I never got hired. I hadn't eaten in a couple days, and I get emotional. My friend took me to lunch, and there was a sign, and it said, waiters wanted. And I thought, okay, this is it. I went to the woman at the main station, and she said I had to come back in the evening. So I went to take what I thought was my last dance class. And while I was in that class, a gentleman came in who owned the studio and said there was a phone call for me. I went out and took it, and it was a choreographer who said that he needed one more dancer. Shit. I knew this was going to happen. So he came to watch me in class for 20 minutes, and he gave me my first job. And I never stopped working after that. I toured the world with Shirley MacLaine. I did commercials. And it was the dawn of MTV. A choreographer friend of mine, Michael Peters, was choreographing a video for Michael Jackson. And he told me, invited me to the audition. And I went. And again, having been an actor, I thought, I knew they were looking for street dancers, people that looked like they were in a gang. So I grew my beard a little bit for a couple days, and I wore an earring and a toothpick, and I wore street clothes. And I walked into the room, and all the other male dancers had on stretch pants and leg warmers, you know? And I thought, oh, this is good. This is a good thing. And so I danced, and I saw Michael Jackson look at me and whisper to Michael Peters, I want that guy. So I got into the video. And I'm going to share with you a little edited version of Beat It, which many of you have probably seen many times, but now you'll know that it's me in there. So I became the guy that did the knife fight and led the gang, and that sort of broke the spell and sort of I was recognized on a global level, and then everybody wanted me to be in their videos, from Diana Ross, Olivia Newton-John. I mean, it just went on and on and on. So it was really, really fun. And then Jolie had said, why don't you show a little something dance and a little something acting? So many, many years later, because I didn't work as an actor, I was choreographing a film for Lars von Trier called Dancer in the Dark. And I was in the studio working, and we were coming to a point where I had to start creating scenes for the character was a 75-year-old Jewish man who ran the community theater. And I kept begging Lars desperately, Lars, when am I going to, I need to work with this guy. We're going to shoot in a few days. And Lars was a very interesting Danish gentleman. And he said to me, Vincent, I found him. And I said, great, where is he? When am I going to meet him? Vincent, you're going to meet him now. I said, great, introduce me. And he put his arm around me and walked me over to the mirror. And he said, here he is. And I said, me? I said, no, no, no. First of all, I'm not 75 and I'm not Jewish, you know. And he said, no, I've been watching you in rehearsals and you are this guy. This is who I want to play this part. And I said, oh, God, Lars, you know, I don't act anymore. I just don't do that. Well, I spoke to friends in Los Angeles, a lot of my out-of-work actor friends, and they told me that if I wouldn't be in a Lars von Trier film acting opposite Catherine Deneuve, that I should never come back to Los Angeles again. So I acquiesced. All right, so I'm going to show you two little clips, okay? Wish me luck here. You can take the lights down. Hello.
Hospitals turn. Now sides to side. Other people can sing. Skirts on kittens. Bright copper kettles and woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with string.
Can we duck out here for a minute?
She's fantastic. What are you talking about?
I think she sings funny.
Oh, God.
And her dancing's not all that great either.
First of all, it's the first time she did it, okay?
Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah, but I had the kettle by then because she didn't take the kettle, so I was stuck. Do you want me to take the kettle?
No, I don't. I just want Kathy to put it over here. This is, you know... You say these words, and then, boom, you just put your hands out, and there they are. They're there.
These are a few of my favorite things. Please don't drop the props, Kathy.
Yeah. Collared ponies and apple strudels. And sleigh bells and folks with noodles.
Wait. Why are you putting it on her head, though? I'm a little confused.
I don't know. It was because she's not going to pick it up. You know,
it kind of looks like you're trying to... put a hat on her head or something.
You're fantastic. You just have to listen to your heart, Gwalda.
I don't want you to call me Gwalda.
Okay, Paul, please.
Here, Carl, that's for me.
Let's do some sound effects. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad.
When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad.
And then I don't tapping.
The sound of
tapping.
Music.
It really needs rhythm. Drums.
That's weird. I don't like looking at myself. So anyway, Madonna. Next topic. A director friend I worked with whom I choreographed Michael Jackson's video "The Way You Make Me Feel," was choreographing a Pepsi commercial for Madonna, and he called me down to the set. And I was absolutely floating on air. You know, I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get to work with Madonna. I'm going to get to choreograph for Madonna. And so Madonna comes around the corner with her little posse, and he says, Madonna, I want to introduce you to Vincent. He's a wonderful choreographer. He's worked for Michael Jackson. He's incredible. I brought him down to work with you. And Madonna looked at me and said, I don't need a fucking choreographer, and walked away. And... I was decimated, you know. And I started walking away, and my director friend said, no, Vince, don't go, stay, just stay for a while. So I hung out on the set, and they were having some trouble getting a shot. The shot was that Madonna had to do a turn and hit the front on a certain count, and the camera that was on a crane out there had to rise up and hit her right here when she finished the turn. Well, it wasn't going well. It wasn't working, and she was pissed. So I went to the director, and I said, if you give me 5 minutes, I can make this work. And he said, okay, do what you have to do. So I went to the crane operator, and I said, look, I'm going to count 5, 6, 7, 8. Then you start moving the crane, and you land on 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I went to Madonna, and I said, listen, I'm not choreographing anything, I promise. I just want you, if you turn and land on the 4 of my count, then the shot will happen. And she did. And the crane operator did, and it worked, and everybody was ecstatic, and I was a hero. So the next day, Joe said, come back, and I came back, and I was working with some dancers doing a little thing that happened in the street, and I'm noticing that the dancers are paying no attention to me, but they're looking over my shoulder, and I turned around, and there was Madonna standing there in big curlers and a pink robe and bunny slippers, and I said, this isn't for you, really, this isn't for you, and she said, no, it's interesting, I like what you're doing, and I'm going to change and come back and show me what you're doing. So I did, and we got along famously, and then we finished that commercial. It was quite successful, and she asked me to then choreograph her video, Express Yourself. And that was successful, and we had a great time working together. And at the end of that, she said to me, I'm going to do a tour soon, and I'd love you to choreograph and direct the tour. So, you know, I told everybody in the entire world that I was going to choreograph and direct her tour. And one day, I heard some dancers say, are you going to... the audition for Madonna's tour? And I said, what tour? And they said, oh, Madonna's having a tour, and the choreographer, director is going to have the audition. Well, it wasn't me, and I was pretty upset. So I took a film with Sidney Pollack, choreographing a project with him, and I came home one day from Jamaica, and I got a telephone call, and it was Madonna. And she was very, very sweet. Hi, Vince, it's Madonna. Well, when Madonna's sweet, you know she has an ulterior motive. So I said, Madonna, what's up? So she blurted out that she had made a huge mistake. She hired the wrong person. It was absolutely devastating. They had had 5 weeks of a very limited time of rehearsal. The choreographer hadn't come up with one step. The dancers were flicking cigarettes at the choreographer. It was horrible. She said, you know me. You know what I can do. You can help me out. I trust you. Can you do it? And I said, okay. Let me have my agent talk to your agents. So after she wanted me so badly, and many tough negotiations later, during which I remember she told my agent, hey, listen, I'm not a fucking bank, you know. And my agent said, no, Madonna, you're not a bank, you're an institution. You... A deal was brokered and I began to work. In 2 days, I choreographed the video Vogue and created the opening number for the show, and then went on and choreographed, besides directing the show, went on to choreograph 23 songs in 21 days. I had no pre-production time. It was all taken up by this woman who never got anything together. What I would do is I would take a song at night and I would put it in headphones and I would sleep with the headphones on my head with the song on a loop. And I would wake up every morning and the song would be visualized completely in my head, the choreography from beginning to end. And I would go into the studio and put it on everybody and then leave it with my assistant to make it clean, to clean all the movement. And I would then concentrate on the next song and I would come back, and this is the way it went for 3 weeks. She's very tough, but on this project she hardly had a chance to challenge me because time was at a premium. I do remember the only thing that she did challenge me about was I had the guys, it was just male dancers, lift her up in a big lift, and she said, I don't want to be lifted like some girl. Well, when you work with Madonna, you learn that you have to be father, brother, mother, boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, confessor, father, confessor, psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, everything. So I said, girl, Madonna, what are you talking about? You're a queen. Madonna said, lift me, boys. It worked. I'm going to show you the first piece of Madonna's I want to share with you is the finale that I did for the Blonde Ambition Tour. But the second piece I'll show you, Fabiola had mentioned it, is from one of the MTV award shows. Madonna called me again and said, Vincent, I need to do a third version of Vogue. I had created the first video of Vogue. Then I created Vogue for the tour, the Blonde Ambition Tour, which is the one I directed and choreographed. And then finally there was this tour, and I said, God, I don't know if I can do it, but I'll go into a studio and I'll play around for a while and I'll see what I can come up with. So I went into a studio, and can you guys see? There's going to be stuff on the screen. Okay. So I went in and I worked on this concept, and she called me, and I said, look, I'm playing with this concept of Marie Antoinette because it seems like movement from Vogue would work well in that style. And I also want to use these big fans. And she said, that sounds like a fucked up idea. And I said, well, why don't you just come see what's happening? And if you like it, use it. If you don't like it, hire somebody else. So she came and she saw it and she loved it and we did it and it was great success. But lest you think that I don't like her, I really do appreciate Madonna for many reasons. I really admire her tenacity, her ambition, her talent, certainly. She braved the way for women in the business, really did. She changed the face of the industry that way. She worked hard for AIDS. And so you have to salute her for all of those things. And she also gave me, as well as Michael did early on, many opportunities when nobody else knew who I was, from choreographing her videos to a solo appearance I did for her on the Academy Awards to choreographing the movie Evita. So I'm going to show you two pieces, an edited version of Keep It Together from the Blonde Ambition Tour and the Marie Antoinette piece from MTV Vogue. Bass down.
Yeah. Astaire, Ginger Rogers, Dance on Air. They had style, they had grace. Rita Hayworth gave good face. Lauren Catherine Manitou, Betty Davis, we love you. Ladies with an attitude, fellas that were in the mood. Don't just stand there, let's get to it. Strike a pose, there's nothing to it. Boom, boom, boom.
Madonna likes to have her breasts squeezed. No. commercials. Commercials are funny, you know. Most people can't wait to get the remote out and move them forward or jump up to get out of the way, so go to the bathroom or get something to eat. But I've been really, really fortunate in the world of commercials. I've directed about 20 and choreographed over 250, most of them with Joe Pitka, who is regarded as the toughest and most incredible commercial director in the United States. He's the one who introduced me to Madonna in that story that I told you a while ago. As a choreographer, sometimes I get to create with amazing dancers, and sometimes I have to turn a frog into a prince. I hope I don't get struck by lightning. I once had to make Whitney Houston look like she could move. Poor Whitney. Commercials are shot fast. Sometimes I would have a few days to choreograph a commercial, or sometimes I would be called in the day of the commercial to try to come up with magic and be brilliant. It wasn't always easy. I'll tell you a little bit about how I created one of the... I'm going to just show you five short commercials, five of my favorites. But one is a GE spot. It ran a few years ago with a little elephant running around in a jungle. I don't know if you saw it, but you might remember it when you do see it. So I was called in by Joe the day before the shoot and said, Vince, you know, we need to have an elephant dance through this whole thing, and we want him to dance to Singing in the Rain, and we want it to be Gene Kelly's choreography. So I said, okay, all right. I thought, how do I start this? So I got Singing in the Rain, and I started to watch Gene Kelly's choreography. Well, I don't tap dance, so that was the first big obstacle. But I looked at it again and again and again, and I thought, all right, I have an idea of what I'll do. So I hired two guys that were tap dancers. They were going to be the front legs and the back legs, you know. And I then had to re-choreograph the dance for a quadruped rather than a biped because it was an elephant, you know. And you have to be careful because if you... You know, they move in opposition. So if they don't, the elephant will fall over, you know. But when I did it that way, the dance didn't look so interesting. So sometimes I sacrificed anatomy for choreography. And they moved the same way at the same time. And then I thought, well, how am I going to keep them equidistant? So I created a wooden frame that they stood inside of and held on to so that as they danced throughout the whole commercial, they would remain equidistant and they would be truly elephant legs. So then when we shot the commercial, they wore elephant legs on a jungle set with black upper torsos, hoods, and black all over the body so that in post-production we could take them out because later we went to a zoo and we shot a baby elephant. Now I have to just tell you a quick little sidebar there. I have an aunt who is an animal fanatic, and when I was telling her this story and I got to the point where we shot the baby elephant, she lost it. She almost peed on the floor. You shot the baby elephant! I said, no, we filmed the baby elephant. Anyway, we shot the baby elephant. And then we eventually morphed the body of the dancers of the top of the body of the real elephant onto the legs of the dancers, and we created the dancing elephant in the GE commercial. So I'm going to show you five spots. The first is a spot for Hummer. The second is a spot for Rubbermaid. The third is the GE spot. The fourth is a Nike spot with Charles Barkley. And the last one, I was asked to do a Mountain Dew commercial and asked if I could come up with concepts that combined Busby Berkeley using skateboarders and guys who rode dirt bikes and all of this. And so this is what I came up with. So these are the five commercials I want to share.
Step stool that's compact and still holds up to 300 pounds. Get the new Easy Step folding stool from Rubbermaid. That run dramatically cleaner. At GE, we're using what we call eco-imagination to create technology that's right in step with nature. GE, imagination at work.
they can be fun. The Hummer spot, for instance, they made me go to Hummer school, and I had to learn. They have an obstacle course when you buy a Hummer. Actually, some people who have Hummers, this is what they do for vacation. They go to this big Hummer track, and you learn how to drive a Hummer. It was absolutely phenomenal. You have to go up inclines like this. You have to learn how to balance the Hummer on a peak, and then you go down the other side. The Hummer goes through water where the water is coming up to the top of the window. Little ducks are swimming by you. You had to drive down a hill where you're on two wheels, and then you switched and went on the other two wheels. It was really incredible, you know, to learn about this before I choreographed the commercial. So, you know, I'm also a research fanatic, and I really like not just coming to do something without having the opportunity to really explore all the possibilities. I feel like the more ammunition you have and information you have when you arrive, the more insightful will be your creativity. So, as I said, I've been really, really fortunate to do some great commercials, not just, you know, the ones that you want to click really fast and get off there. Films. I've really had great time in the film business. I've worked with some phenomenal film directors. Among them were Steven Spielberg and Sidney Pollack, Alan Parker, Mike Nichols, and Lars von Trier, many others, but these guys were just a gas. So I'm going to show you two things. The first is a very, very short clip, and the second is a little bit longer, but the first short clip is from The Birdcage that I did with Mike Nichols, starring Robin Williams and Nathan Lane, directed by Mike Nichols. And in this film, if you don't know, Robin plays the straight guy, and this was quite difficult for him, while Nathan Lane got to play the outlandish transvestite part, which Robin wanted to play, but that's not how Mike cast him. And it was driving Robin Williams absolutely crazy. He was like, felt that he was in a straitjacket all the time. So we had a break during filming a scene, and Robin grabbed me and pulled me behind the set and said, Vince, quick, come here. Can you come up with something like insane for me to do really, really fast? And I thought, God, Robin, I don't know. And I thought about it for a second, and he goes, you got to do it fast, and I got to learn it fast. And I said, well, how about the history of dance in 30 seconds? And he said, okay. So I put together the history of dance in 30 seconds, and I taught it to Robin Williams, and he said, don't tell anybody. So we went back out onto the set, and we started to shoot the scene, and at the end of the scene, Robin broke into this piece, and of course, everybody broke up. The crew broke up. You know, it messed up the entire thing. Mike Nichols broke up, and he said, what are you guys doing? And Robin said, got down on his hands and knees and started crawling around Mike Nichols and said, oh, Mike, please, 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 can't we keep it in the film? Please, can't we keep it in the film? Please, please, please. And Mike said, all right, let's shoot it again. So we did, and it didn't go onto the cutting room floor. So I'm going to show that little clip. But about film and about sort of the way I work, I'm an avid fan of visualization. I believe that if you want something and you visualize it over and over and over, that it can happen to you, especially in an industry like the entertainment industry where there are so many potential artists desiring so few positions. You have to do everything you can, and I have a secret weapon, and that's my refrigerator. I have always taken any artist I wanted to work with and put their picture on my refrigerator, believing that passing the refrigerator as often as you do every day, you see these artists and you put them into your subconscious and you send that out into the ether, and then you hope that the artist on the other side picks it up and gets taken into their creative subconscious, and it has always, always worked for me. In fact, the bizarre thing is I just finished doing a project about Elvis Presley, and I thought when I got the call to do the project, this is really weird because this is a huge project, and I never thought about Elvis Presley. Well, I looked on my refrigerator, and several years ago, 8 or 10 years ago, on the front of the TV guide, they had those kind of hologram images where, you know, a figure stands one way and you move it and it changes. Well, I bought it and took it off, and it was Elvis Presley doing Jailhouse Rock. And I realized that it was on my refrigerator. So I'm telling you, students or anybody, this works. It really, really works. I'm a testament to it. I've had so many people on the refrigerator, and I've worked with them all. This is leading me to this story. There was a point at the end of the 90s when I decided that I wasn't going to choreograph a project that I didn't direct, and I made this very clear to my agents. And I got a phone call one day, and my agent Julie said, Vincent, a script has come in for you to choreograph a film, and I think you're going to want to do it because two people that are on your refrigerator are heavily involved in this film, both Lars von Trier and Björk. And I said, wow, send me the script. So I looked at the script, and I read it, and I was totally disappointed because at that point, the film, which later became Dancer in the Dark, was called Tap. And as I've already told you, I don't tap. So I had to tell Lars von Trier that I didn't tap, and he called me and said, but you have to do this, Vincent. You have to do this, you know. I've been looking for three different choreographers to interview, and I found out that it's all you. All the three pieces are all yours, so you have to do this movie with me. And I told him I didn't tap, and he said, well, will you maybe oversee the film? And I said, no, I don't do that. I choreograph every single step, or I don't do the project at all. So he asked me if I would fly to Denmark to speak to him about it, and I did. So I sat across from him, and Lars von Trier is sort of the king of Denmark, and nobody tells Lars von Trier what to do. Lars von Trier tells everybody else what to do. And so I sat across from Lars, and I said, well, Lars, let me tell you something. If you changed the dances from not being all tap dances, then maybe I could do the film. And also I tried to sell him by saying tap is a very specific medium, and it's very difficult. It's like point work in ballet, and you might get away with Björk, who's not a dancer, doing one tap dance, but seven tap dances was not going to work in a movie. And then he said to me, well, Vincent, you know, I don't know about that, but, you know, if I did do that, I wouldn't want any kind of crazy flying or anything because, you know, these dances are fantasies, but they have to be reality. And I said, well, Lars, on page 65 in the prison scene, you have her dancing on the ceiling. And Lars got up from his little table, and he walked around the room, and he walks like this. And he came back, and he looked at me, and he said, Vincent, people don't say these kinds of things to me. And I said, well, you know, if I'm going to come to Denmark for 5 months when I hate the cold weather, and I'm going to be an integral part of this film, I have to be able to speak my artistic mind. And he got up and left the room, and I didn't see him for the rest of the day. And I was on my packing and waiting for the taxi to pick me up the next morning, and he came out and said, come here into my office. And I went into his office, and he said, I want you to do the movie. Nobody says these things to me, and I think this is good for this movie. I don't know how to make a musical, and you can help me make a musical, and you can be my artistic brother, and we will rewrite these film scenes, these dance scenes together. And we did. We went up to a little shack, a thatched hut place on the North Sea, and basically drank vodka for 3 days. And someone, I think it was a little gnome or something, came and knocked on the door. And by the time you went to answer the door, there was no one there, just food. And I brought in the food, and we would eat the food and drink more vodka, and we rewrote the script. So it was fantastic. The movie was an amazing experience for me. I was hired to choreograph the movie, and then, as you saw, I then acted in the film, which was an amazing experience because the way you work with Lars von Trier in a film is he writes the sketch of a story, and then you do what he's written only once, and then you spend the next 3 hours improvising. And so 99% of what you saw up there was improvisation. You just improvise, and that's what he loves. And if he finds that there's something story-wise that's left out, he'll ask you to go back and, in an improvisation, put that back in. So it was such a trip for me, with not being an actor anymore, to be improvising with Catherine Deneuve. It was absolutely phenomenal. And then what happened was he decided he wanted to shoot the film himself with a handheld camera. And Lars von Trier makes up all of these rules. And one of the new rules he had made for this film was that we were going to shoot the dance scenes with 100 DVD cameras. So he got too busy and he said, "You're a director, you direct the dance scenes." So it was remarkable. I would choreograph the dances, and then we would go onto location or into the sets, and he and I would walk around, and he would say, let's put a camera up there. And I would say, "Cool, let's put a camera down there." And he'd say, "Let's put a camera up there." And I would say, "Well, let's put a camera over there." And then "We can have someone, we can have a moving camera." And he goes, "Vincent, I made a rule, no moving cameras." And I said, "Okay." So I put a camera on a door, and I had a dancer move the door. So, or I put a camera on a bike, and I had the dancer move the bike. So I got him, and we had a great, great, great time. So I had a crew, and I worked with the crew, and after we set the 100 cameras, it was then my responsibility to frame every one of the 100 shots. It was an amazing experience for the actors and dancers, because what we did was we attached every one of the 100 cameras to one central record button. And when the music began, the dancers and actors did the entire piece from beginning to end. We pressed the record button as they started, and 100 cameras shot simultaneously. It was fascinating for them and so easy, because they only had to do each piece no more than 3 times. It was absolute hell for the editors, as you can imagine. They had 3 takes of 100 cameras, so they had minimum 3,000 shots to do for every single piece that we did. But it was really, really, really fun. So I'm going to show you those 2 pieces. The little piece from Birdcage with Robin, and one scene from Dancer in the Dark. And if you don't know the movie, just to explain this a little bit, the film is about a woman named Selma who has a very, very difficult life. And what she does is she hears rhythms around her. She's going blind, and she hears rhythms around her, and she turns these rhythms into fantasies for herself, imagining, as she's always wanted to do her whole life, being in her own musical. So that's what you're going to see, the piece in the factory. And in this, she tries to seduce her friend Catherine Deneuve, who she calls Kvalda, to get up and dance as well. So here we go. Any of you guys up there know how to fast forward this thing? Or program it to the next place? Thanks, Jace.
Is it chapters?
I don't know. But anyway, while you're doing that, this is a good time for question and answers. At this point, you know, let's do that, because we got to move forward here, and I don't want to waste the time. So while we're going forward here and fast forward, if anybody has a question or something, I can answer that now.
If you have a question, if you could please raise your hand and indicate it to either Sherry or I, and we'll bring the mic to you. And please wait until the microphone has been brought to you before beginning to speak. Are there any questions?
No. No questions? I can't believe it. Oh, here we go.
You told a very remarkable story of 21 separate dances composed by yourself in 21 days.
23 and 21.
I'm sorry. Now, the question I have is the dancers. I mean, is that normal for dancers to be able to integrate 23 dances in 21 days and not go out of their mind?
No, absolutely not. But, you know, we had no option, and that's the other thing that you know about working in this industry. You have a schedule, and things have to get done. And so they had been so relaxed from having worked with this other woman for 5 weeks and not having learned one dance, that when it came to me, I was so clear about what I needed that I just came in, I taught them like this, and they learned. The thing about dancers that's so incredible is that talented dancers are truly like musicians. They have a memory, a motor memory that records things so that you teach steps and it's exactly the same as a musician reading sheet music. And for some reason, they remember. It's hard to believe, but, you know, I often heard when I was an actor, people would come up to me and they didn't often say, oh, I love the performance or this. They would say, how did you remember all of those lines, you know? And this is what always amazes me about dancers, is that dancers learn something in a minute, in an afternoon, and then they're able to go out and perform it. Case in point, if you watch, let's say, So You Think You Can Dance, for example, on television, you know, those kids get 2 days to learn an entire dance in a genre which they've never done in their entire lives. Some of those kids are hip-hop dancers and they're expected to do quick step, you know. They've never done that ever, but they're dancers. And this is what they do. They train their bodies and their minds and their motor memories, and it all gets put together and it happens. It's kind of a miracle, but that's just the way dancers work. They are absolutely amazing. And the sad thing is that the lifespan for a dancer is so short. Most dancers stop working unless they're in perhaps a company. Joffrey, for instance, has a company that is only with older dancers. Those who have been experienced, they're in their 40s, 50s, and some early 60s. And it's absolutely phenomenal because what you see is you don't get as much technique anymore, but you see life lessons, and you see a mature performer coming onto the stage, and it's a whole different experience. But that's really the nature of dance. It's what happens, and it's a marvelous experience, and I'm so glad that I had the opportunity for so many years to be part of it.
Anybody else?
Hi. When you think of choreography and Michael Jackson, I think Kenny Ortega's name comes to mind just because of the...
Go ahead, ask me again.
Okay. When you think of choreography and Michael Jackson, Kenny Ortega's name comes to mind because of the This Is It tour. Mm-hmm. Did you work with him? And if so, did you collaborate together? Or?
This is a tough one for me because I have a real problem with the film This Is It. I'll talk about Michael in a minute. I worked with him for 16 years, and Michael was a perfectionist, and Michael never, ever, ever wanted anyone to see him in rehearsal mode, ever. Michael did, all he wanted to do was show the world perfection. And so I was very disturbed by the film. I think that it was interesting for fans of Michael Jackson to see a bit of what he's like in a rehearsal environment, but I was quite happy when I read that Janet Jackson was as incensed as I was, knowing that her brother would never, ever have allowed this film to be seen. He was a perfectionist. I'm furious with Kenny. I know Kenny. Michael would never have approved this film. And it infuriates me that the producers and Kenny Ortega took it upon themselves after Michael died to do something that totally would have gone against everything Michael Jackson stand for his entire career. I think it was selfish, and I think it was done to make a lot of money. And I do respect the fact that Michael had billions of fans around the world and that they appreciated seeing him in a rehearsal situation, but I knew Michael, and I knew what he wanted, and I knew he never would have wanted that. So that's how I feel about This Is It. This is that. One more, and then we can move on.
I had two questions. One question is, when you watch these videos, being a choreographer, do you still see mistakes in them that bother you, or can you watch it with full enjoyment? In other words, when you choreograph and you have a dancer who doesn't do the step the way you wanted to, does that bother you still?
Very honestly, there's very few mistakes in these pieces because I'm a fanatic. And I was trained by the choreographer, Michael Peters, who created Thriller and Beat It, and I was his assistant. And so my job would be Michael Peters would choreograph the movement, and then my job was to go in and clean the movement so that every finger was exactly correct, every eye was exactly correct, every head hit the same angle, and that's how I was trained, and that's what I did. I'm a perfectionist. I'm a perfectionist in everything I do. I've always been that way, and I'm a bit eccentric that way. Later, you'll see a bit of Smooth Criminal, and it was before a lot of digital photoshopping came in, and the dancers were so exact when you get to the end of the piece that so many people came and asked me, is that real? Were those all real dancers doing that? Because you won't see one mistake. You won't see one angle of one arm or one head or one chin that's out of line. That's just me. I'm a fanatic. Other people aren't that way. Now, the difference in that is in Dancer in the Dark, I worked a totally different way. I let myself go, and I figured that these pieces couldn't look as if they were choreographed by Vincent Patterson. They had to look like they were choreographed by Selma. So I split the difference between myself being this fanatic and a woman who loved musicals, and if she put herself in a musical and choreographed everything around her, what would that be like? And the interesting thing is I paid for it with reviews for the first 2 months after the movie came out. I got scathing reviews saying, who is this guy? He knows absolutely nothing about dance. He knows absolutely nothing about directing. The dancers are sloppy. They don't know what they're doing. And this was a conscious decision on my part, one that I had spoken to and was verified by Lars, saying that I felt that these should more be Selma's fantasies than mine. So that's the answer to that. And you had one more question? Everything always sort of melds together. So, everything sort of bled back and forth over and over. I'm going to talk a little bit about that when I get to Michael Jackson. I think that all of these art forms, for me, the joy has been to be versatile in all of these art forms. And I'm so grateful that, you know, having been here and been an actor for years, and then I continued to study in Los Angeles being an actor, even though I didn't want to act anymore. But I felt that the more I learned about acting, I could develop a vocabulary in which I would be able to, as a director or a choreographer, speak to actors and dancers in a different way. Some way that, for me, I think one of the most important things that you can do as a director especially is to really be a mirror. Because I think that when you work with good actors, they know what they're doing. You don't have to teach them technique. What you have to do is be able to reflect for them what they're doing so that if they think something's working, you can show them and discuss with them and speak to them in their vocabulary that they might not be doing it the way that they think they are, and then finesse them delicately into a way that doesn't destroy their ego or their performances, but allows them to continue to do the best work they can. So, I still think of myself as a choreographer. I still think of myself as a dancer, even though I'm predominantly been a director for the last 6 or 7 years. But all of those arts for me, carry over into the other. And so everything I've done, whether it's been directing just straight legitimate plays or operas where there's no choreography, all of my staging still has some sort of inner rhythm to the naturalistically, the movement of the actors or performers on the stage. So it's all a big mishmash, you know, and I think that's what has sort of given me a certain style, that and the ability of approaching dance from an acting perspective, because it's only been the last couple of years since I sort of stopped being a choreographer that I've allowed myself to accept the title of choreographer. I've always resented it. I've always considered myself a director who made up dances. And I've always spoken to my dancers as actors. I always thought this was very, very important. And I think that in a lot of the pieces that I've done up here that you see the direction of, you think they are actors who know how to dance very well, as opposed to dancers who don't know anything about acting. So that's just been my approach. Okay? All right, so here are those two pieces. I hope.
You would just stand here like an object?
No. You do an eclectic celebration of the dance. You do Fosse, Fosse, Fosse. You do Martha Graham, Martha Graham, Martha Graham. Or Twyla, Twyla, Twyla. Or Michael Kidd, Michael Kidd, Michael Kidd, Michael Kidd. Or Madonna, Madonna, Madonna. But you keep it all inside.
I've always wanted to do a piece for a company, challenging me in a different way than just the commercial work that I've always had the opportunity to do. And 9/11 brought that opportunity to me. I think that 9/11 altered all of us in some way. As an artist, I was compelled to create a piece that might express the whirlwind of emotions that ran through my heart and my mind over this horrific situation. I invited a group of dancers that I knew to come in and work with me for a weekend. And I took the names of the dead and I put them all over the walls. And sorry. I asked each of the dancers to find a name that they connected to and that through this weekend they would dance for that person. So the piece that I created represents a belief that I have that when a person dies a tragic, quick, violent death, whether it be in a gang or whether it be a drive-by shooting or whether it be what happened at 9/11, that the soul is confused and that the soul hangs in a netherworld, not knowing if it's supposed to move on or if it's attached to still to the earthly plane. And so something happens where it then eventually understands that it needs to move on. And so that's what I created here. It was interesting to me, the piece showed on a lot of television stations and in a lot of dance film festivals, and many people wrote me and told me that they interpreted the piece in a whole different way, that they thought that each of the dancers represented themselves. Or a family member of someone who had died in that tragedy, and that they felt that they were one of the dancers alone, and that it was only by uniting with their friends or their neighbors that they collectively were able to find peace within themselves and move on. So this is just a short piece that I created, and I wanted to share that just as a kind of different kind of choreography that I also got to do. I directed this piece. My friend Joe Pitka, who I've mentioned several times, who does the commercials, saw the piece and came to me and loved it. I did it live once and thought it was powerful enough that he rented a sound stage and brought his camera crew and for the first time in his career actually ran the camera as I directed the film. So the piece is called Threnody. And here it is. Thank you. And of course, I have to conclude with Michael. My life has really been blessed with artists who have all been at the top of their games. The pressure has been absurd for 25 years because you can't make mistakes. But the benefits, of course, have been vast. I've been hired because I've been trusted and respected. And as an artist, nothing can really make your creative heart soar any higher than that. I worked with Michael for 16 years, and I created some of what I feel is the most rewarding work of my entire career. Almost every single job I ever got after being in Beat It was 1 or 2 degrees away from Michael Jackson somehow. It all came back to Michael Jackson, from the commercials to the opera that I directed to the last show that I just did for a $200 million show for Cirque du Soleil, all about Elvis Presley in City Center in Las Vegas. Somehow it all goes back to Michael Jackson. He believed in me when I was nobody, truly, and he gave me the opportunity and many, many opportunities, one after the next, allowing me to choreograph him and direct him in videos and live tours and commercials and create his first solo tour for him, appearances on MTV, the Grammys, the American Music Awards, the Super Bowl, and to create what he often told people was his favorite work of all of his, which was Smooth Criminal. Working with him was not only amazing, but it was like being a kid in Santa's workshop, you know? He only had one directive, and it was simple. Be as artistically free and innovative as possible and create something that the world has never, ever seen before. This is the ultimate freedom for an artist, especially when there's money to bring your ideas to fruition, of course. And there was always money when it came to Michael Jackson, so that was great. You could be as insane and creative as you want, and if it was innovative and he loved it, he wrote the checks. And combined with knowing that any work that I did with him would be seen by billions of people around the world, it challenged me to find my artistic voice without any boundaries. To answer your question about how did I transition from director to choreographer, I had danced in Beat It. I was one of the dancing zombies and the assistant choreographer on Thriller, and I was sitting home one night, and the telephone rang, and I picked it up, and I said, hi, and I hear this voice. Is Vincent there? And I said, who's this? It's Michael Jackson. I said, get the fuck out. This is not Michael Jackson. Who is this, you know? No, it's really Michael Jackson. I said, this is not Michael Jackson. Who the hell is this, you know? No, Vincent, really, it's me. You know, we danced and Beat It and Thriller. I said, I know. And he goes, it's really Michael. And I said, oh, shit. Oh, Michael. Hi, Mike. How are you? You know, so sorry, man. I really thought you were somebody pulling a joke on me. So he was in a recording studio around the corner in Hollywood. I live kind of in Hollywood, in the hills under the D of the Hollywood sign. And he was just down the street, and he asked me if I would come over to this recording studio. So I went over, and I hung out with him, and we talked for a while, and I thought, what, you know, this is strange. And he said, I want to play a song for you, you know, that I made. And, you know, I don't have any words. There's no lyrics. I just want to play the song. So I said, great. So he played the music to Smooth Criminal. And he said, so what do you think? I said, I think it's great. And he said, okay, we'll take it with you, okay? And I said, all right. So I went home, and I had no idea. And he called me back 2 days later, and he said, so did you come up with an idea? And I said, for what? I thought he wanted me to dance in a video or something. And basically, he then said, no, I want you to choreograph and direct the piece. So I was blown away. I had done a few tiny little commercials. I had directed choreographed a few videos for Van Halen and a couple things for David Lee Roth, but California Girls, basically having him watch a lot of boobs jumping around, but, you know, I'd never done anything major at all, and so all of a sudden, I found myself in a sound stage with a $40,000 camera in my hands and an amazing sound system and a basic elementary set after I told him my idea to create an underworld club. At the time, there was no concept of a film being called Moonwalker in the works. It was just this video. So I hired 10 dancers to start, and I started playing around with them. And Michael was recording his album, so I would then go to the studio or to his home, and I would show him what I shot, and he said, "I love it. We need more dancers, don't you think?" And I said, "Sure." So he said, "Get 10 more dancers." So I got 10 more dancers, and then I would work with them, and then I would shoot it, and I would go to his house and watch The Third Man, and bubbles would be running all over the room and taking our popcorn away, and then he'd look at what I did, and he said, "I think you need some more dancers, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, Mike." So I would work with 10 more dancers, and then he would look at what I did, and he'd say, "I think you need a second floor in that room, don't you?" "Sure, Mike." So I wound up with about 50 dancers and two stories, and we shot this little video in about 3 weeks, and this was unheard of, absolutely unheard of. Amazing people dropped by the set throughout the whole thing, from Hermes Pan, who was the choreographer for Fred Astaire, Elizabeth Taylor, Liza Minnelli, Jimmy Stewart. Every time you turned around, there was another unbelievable legend standing by your side. I remember Hermes Pan giving Michael what Michael said was the best compliment of his life. Hermes told Michael, who was Fred Astaire was his idol, and Hermes Pan told Michael that if Fred had been there, Fred would have been more excited than anything that Fred had ever created in his life. So, Michael was an amazing man. He loved the world, and all he wanted to do was create great work for his fans. He challenged every one of us. I'm so sorry, wow. This is deep. He challenged every one of us to be the best we could and then challenged us to be even better than that. He was the most polite person I ever met in my life, and especially in this industry. He never said an unkind word about anybody, and he never bitched, he never complained, he never told you that he didn't like something. As an example, if someone would come to him with a costume or something that he didn't want to wear, he wouldn't say, like Madonna would, "Get that fucking thing out of here, you know, and off with your head." He would say, "Wow, that's a really good idea, but I was thinking maybe we could try something a little different, something like this." Never, ever, ever in 16, 17 years I worked with him did I ever hear him say an unkind word to anybody, ever. And he was the loneliest person that I ever met. I would sit with him in the trailers, and he would cry and cry, wondering why his brothers and the press would say such mean and negative things about him when all he wanted to do was bring good to the world. He couldn't go to the store by himself. He couldn't go out. I remember him one time telling me that he wished he could just go to a party and hide in the corner to be able to see what it would be like to be at a party. So 16 years of working with him, there's lots and lots of stories, and I could have made the whole evening about that, but I didn't. And I could be here all night telling them, but I have to wrap this evening up, so I will. So I'm going to share two things with you that I did with him. The first is a bit of an edited version of Smooth Criminal. And then the second was the last project that I did with Mike. I was going to do some stuff with him a few years ago, but then I got other jobs and I couldn't do it. But and he had asked me actually to do this last tour before he asked Kenny, and I was then involved in the Cirque du Soleil project, so I couldn't do that either, which is why I feel so strongly about the film. One of the reasons I feel strongly about the film. But I choreographed and directed a piece for him called Blood on the Dance Floor. And it became a global success, and it was shot by a cinematographer named Conrad Hall, who won many, many Academy Awards and is one of America's greatest DPs, cinematographers. But and I loved what we did, and I loved what I did with Connie, but I had a young friend, and I, fresh kid, you know, 20 years old, and he shot some commercials and stuff for me, and I asked him to bring his Super 8 camera over and shoot the dance that we were doing, the video that we were doing, and because I wanted some really gritty dance footage, something that showed a little bit different image of Michael Jackson, more of the Michael Jackson that I knew, the raw side, the sexy side, the real guy side. So we put together a version of the video, and Sony absolutely hated it and said that the world would never accept that video. But so few people ever saw it, which is why I thought that I would conclude the evening with a little special gift to all of you for being here and bearing through this evening with me. So what you'll see is a condensed version of Smooth Criminal and then Blood on the Dance Floor. And it's fun and it's sexy and it's a little bit nasty. And maybe you'll want to get up and dance. I don't know. So pump up the music, okay? This is what I mean about dancers being actors.
Watch. Thank you.
Just one thing about the way Michael worked physically when it came to dance. The gentleman who had asked me that question before isn't here, but you know, I run into a lot of dancers, and you teach them something, and they get frustrated because they can't do it immediately. You know, and I tell them the story about Michael Jackson in Smooth Criminal, the one movement that repeats itself. It's about four counts of eight, and I taught it to Michael, and Michael then stood in front of a mirror for 5 hours nonstop and did that movement again and again and again and again and again, those four counts of eight for 5 solid hours without stopping, until by the time he walked away from the mirror, it looked as if he had invented it and it just came out of his body organically. And this was the kind of concentration that this man had. He was absolutely remarkable. There's never been anybody like him. And there probably won't ever be again. We lost a great, great artist. So thank you for bearing with me. Thank you for this great honor. And thank you for sitting here and sharing this past experience of my life. And if you have any questions, we can ask them. And if you don't, that's fine too. So. Thanks. That's
Thank
so sweet. Thank you, hon.
And this concludes this evening's event. I'd like to remind everyone that there's a reception at the Clark Farmhouse at 249 West Lowther Street following this right now. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, really. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah, a lot of people are often shy to ask a question, but if you want to come over there and hang out, I'm there. And if you want to talk about anything pertaining to any of this that you've seen or whatever, please feel free. I'll talk to you. You can ask any questions you want, and we can have fun time talking. Thanks a lot, everybody, for coming. Thank you, Harry. Thank you so much.